You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Stacy Switzer. Stacy, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
So, Stacy, you're talking to me from L.A. Tell me a little bit about what you're working on now as a curator.
Yeah, sure. So we are building out what is still a fairly new organization called Fathomers in Los Angeles. Fathomers is the next life of another organization that was based in Kansas City, Missouri for 20 years called Grand Arts. And Grand Arts closed 3 years ago, and there was a core group of us who felt really committed to the mission of Grand Arts, which was essentially to invite artists to propose the kinds of projects that they felt like they might not be able to realize anywhere else, either because they were conceptually risky, legally complicated, any number of issues that might make projects just sort of unlikely and unwieldy. And those were the kinds of projects that we love to sink our teeth into. And so we wanted to keep doing that, and we thought about how we might do that in another context. And around that time, 3 or 4 years ago, we convened a group of artists with whom we had worked in the past to start to think about what a Grand Arts 2.0 would look like. And eventually the idea for Fathomers was born. So now we do not have a space. We are a small team of curators and arts administrators and production people and researchers who are working out of a co-working space at present, which is fine with us. And that's because the idea is that we will be realizing projects where they need to be in the world over time. So we've pivoted the mission from Grand Arts a little bit, thinking concertedly again about the way that we work with artists and the stage at which we kind of enter into a creative process with them. So now we're really embracing long-term projects, and that means not just really trying to give artists the time and space to think about what the right project to do with us is while they're already kind of collaborating with us on that research and thinking, but we're also thinking about the long-term from the point of view of, you know, long-term stewardship of the planet and the ecosystem. So a number of our projects have some sort of explicit engagement with science and technology and futures. So give me one example.
I want to dig more into just like what you're building and more about it. But so far it's abstract. There'll be links to the website, of course, where people can see more, but can you give me an example of one project from the past that you've worked on, you know, from beginning to end, and just describe it as something that is maybe typical of Fathomers, because you're talking about a type of challenging project, but what does that mean exactly? What would one example of that be that you think was successful, let's say?
You mean from the Grand Arts period, or
from the Grand Arts period, or from now, maybe something fairly recent that you think typifies how you're moving forward here?
Yeah, sure. So, the first project that we started with is a project by the artist Michael Jones McKean, who's based in New York and Richmond, Virginia, and sometimes in France. And I think that's a good one to start with because it actually bridges backward in time, because we did a project with him at Grand Arts about 12 years ago. And where that project ended is where we picked up with him 12 years later as our first Fathomers project. And so that project now is called 12 Earths, but the kernel that we began with is the story of Donald Crowhurst, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners might be familiar with, because he was a kind of failed amateur yachtsman who tried to enter a race to sail around the world and be the first person, fastest person to sail around the world single-handedly without stopping. And I should not go into that story now because it's long and has so many twists and turns, but it's a beautiful, devastating story of an epic failure of somebody who was trying to circumnavigate the globe. And when Michael was completing his Grand Arts project, years ago, he ended up acquiring Crowhurst's boat, which is called the Tynemouth Electron, and which is currently beached in the Cayman Islands on Cayman Brac. And when we started thinking about what Fathomers as an organization would become, my first thought was to go back to Michael and say, what kind of project could be sort of a continuation of the conversation? And that for us was a pretty radical thing to kind of pick up where we left off, but it was also something that was really exciting because we had developed an understanding of each other's practices and working relationships, you know, by staying close over a number of years. So
let me just ask, though, what he did previously was what exactly? You enabled him to purchase that boat, or how did he present the work on
yeah,
that?
Back when, it was a sculptural installation that had a number of different components. It was a mixed media sculptural installation in our space in Kansas City, but it also at that time had a research component, for example, that involved collaborating with researchers at the University of Kansas to find the longest way around the Earth. So there were always these kind of, and that's very much Michael's practice, is that he considers himself a sculptor, but there are these other kind of vital research projects that sort of become the bedrock of whatever the larger project is. So I don't want to get too far afield from what 12 Earths is now, but all to say there's a deep history there. So now with 12 Earths, we're developing a project with Michael that is designed to look at scale and to think critically about how we can kind of have the sensitivity and develop a sensitivity to things that are beyond our comprehensible limits. So, you know, if the Earth is maybe a first best example, right? When you think about artists and scale, it's not just a question of, you know, how big can you go for the sake of going big, but really how far can you stretch the limits of your understanding? And I think for all of us, it also means how far can we stretch in terms of building a network of partners. So the idea for the artwork is that there will be 12 sites on a single line around the globe. And again, this kind of comes back to that research early on about the longest way around the Earth. Now we're looking for a different line around the Earth that touches on sites that are of particular interest to Michael and to many other people for a variety of different reasons. So, for example, we're looking at what line around the Earth touches a large ray telescope, or what line around the Earth touches the site of meteor impact, or what line around the Earth touches a place that's particularly charged for the way that people interact with the internet, or any number of different criteria. So as an artist, Michael is developing out a list of criteria. And then together with a growing group of people who are weighing in on various parts of this project, we're mapping out what the project is as we go.
And so part of what you'll be doing with him is, I imagine, helping to organize this and also funding and ultimately some kind of public exhibition of this. Is that correct? Funding and exhibition are kind of components of what will happen next with that particular project?
That's right, yeah. So we're funding and fundraising for the project. In terms of exhibition, it's a it's a pretty radical approach, I think, to what it means for a project to have an exhibition moment. You know, if we imagine that this project is actually designed to unfold over at least 10 years and maybe all of our lifetimes, and maybe we'll exceed that, then we're trying to think now about how we build a structure to do that. And of course, there's a lot of possibility for failure embedded in that too, but it's a journey that we're on together. So, you know, there could be, you know, again, if we imagine these 12 coordinates around the Earth, there can be an exhibition moment for the first one, the second one, the third one, and they might unfold according to a certain rhythm. So those are things that we're working on together right now.
And so that's idea-based, of course, and as well as he's a sculptor. So these exhibitions, while not being clear what's in them, they'll be sculpture, most likely of some kind, right?
Yeah, so there will certainly be moments of interaction with objects. And one thing I wanted to share when you're talking about kind of success and past practice and present practice, asking about that, is we feel really excited that we are in the midst of convening these very, very interdisciplinary groups to kind of attack problems around the project. So, for example, one idea for a sculptural object that would become part of the project is a special bone, to grow a bone. And so we have brought together, recently this summer, we had a convening of people who came together to start thinking about various aspects of the project. And that convening included somebody from an upstart biotech firm that's actually growing human bone, paired next to Sophia Sinclair, who is an amazing poet, paired next to Jeremiah Chu, who's an interesting designer from Los Angeles.
And so you brought these people together as well. The collaboration is something that you created there.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have this kind of big, really exciting, unwieldy project, but we're bringing together lots of really disparate voices for different moments in the project to move them forward. So the idea is that it sort of exceeds us in every way that it can, right? That it's a multiplicity of voices, that the project unfolds over a very long term. It's kind of growing, growing, growing in every direction, which is scary but super exciting.
That is exciting. So congratulations on that. And then just to step back and talk a little bit about the stage you're in now. So you're in a co-working space with this, with your team. How is funding organized for this? Because you're basically starting a nonprofit, right, in service of the mm-hmm. arts, in service of the public's education. How do you go about fundraising, and what's your goal for that? Because you're,
Yeah, well, our goals are very ambitious. And we have some generous funding that has helped substantially with our operations. So we're fundraising for projects and programs. We were incredibly lucky to get a substantial grant from the Andy Warhol Foundation last December. So we feel like that's really important in helping to prove the value of our work and our viability going forward. So we're working with foundations, we're looking for individual donors, and we're thinking about different ways that we can bring more people into the fold of these kind of conversations, like the one I mentioned. So, you know, if we have 12 really amazing people sitting around the table attacking a problem, you know, how do we widen that circle, and how do we potentially include funders in those conversations too?
And in terms of how ambitious your goals are, how large do you want this organization to grow? What should be, if I can ask that, what should be the annual budget, and how many artists do you imagine working with, say, within 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think one of the things that's most important about what we do and how we do it, that's not always clear, because we do really occupy this very hybrid space, which is by design. But it is that it's an incredibly, you know, in the best case, sensitive, intimate, responsive relationship with all the artists that we're working with. And really everybody on our team is a curator in some way, right? And a steward of the ideas and a steward of the project. So it's hard for me to imagine that we would grow past, say, a staff of 20 people. And 15 or 20 people might be a dream for the next several years. That said, I would leave anything open. And budget-wise, I mean, certainly we, you know, again, when you're looking at a project that's touching 12 different sites around the world, and that's just one of a handful of projects, because we're also incubating projects with Phil Russ in San Francisco and Jill Maggott in New York. And we have some new collaborators, Lonnie Brooks and Ahmed Best, and we're hosting a conversation with a bioartist named Heather Dewey Hagberg. So by no means is it just 12 Earths, but we could certainly, it would be more is better at this point, to be perfectly frank, in terms of supporting these artists, because you know, part of what we're doing is trying to support the parts of artistic practice that are so often invisible, right? And that the artist is so often left to kind of figure out on their own. And we're trying to say, you know, let us help you get to a place that you might not have expected by having a little bit more support in these various ways.
Mm. I love that. And so it's exciting. It's very exciting what you're doing. And I really enjoyed talking to you about this in terms of funding something like this in the United States, just to say one more thing about it, because I talk to artists, you know, from Europe and different places who are often dependent on programs like this, you know, which in my understanding there's more of in Europe and less of in the United States, and funding just typically is less in the United States, as I understand it. Do you find it more challenging to get that funding being in the United States to reach the ambitious goals you have? I mean, obviously there are organizations that do it all the time. There's these large organizations, these nonprofits that are often non-collecting and event-oriented, and they, you know, they bring in an enormous amount of money. But how do you see that field? Does it seem very difficult, competitive, or something else in terms of fundraising in the United States for the ambitious goals for your organization that you have?
Yeah, I mean, it would be hard for me to compare to organizations in Europe, because I don't have, you know, I've not worked in Europe. I don't have a close relationship with those funding structures. I would say that the primary challenge is just that we're a small organization. And so I find that when I share what we're up to with people, they're incredibly receptive and excited about it. It's just a question of how, of reach, right? Like LA is a huge city and California is a big state, and there are a lot of people to talk to outside of the region too. And so getting our message out and sharing really how we are, you know, we're not a museum, we're not an alternative space with a space. And what does that mean for us? You know, I don't see it as a lack by any means. Again, it was a concerted decision to be more nimble. But that to me is the primary challenge, is just getting the mission out and then finding the right people who can be deeply connected to it. Because I think that's the other thing is, for me, in the best case, you know, we're bringing on long-term partners who are really, you know, deeply interested in these intersections between art and science. And yeah.
And long-term partners meaning philanthropists, patrons, sponsors, who are specifically interested in these kinds of goals and would want to remain as supporting partners. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully people who are, you know, really excited to you know, help develop out parts of the project. For example, this boat that I mentioned, the Tynmouth Electron, in a really wild turn of events, we were gifted a replica of the Electron. So the actual Electron is decaying on the beach in Cayman Brac, but we are also the stewards of a a precise replica that exists in Malta. So, and that was gifted to us by somebody who just took a shine to the project and thought, you know, that it could become something amazing. So people like that, you know, it's too good to be true. And so the question is, you know, how do we cultivate ever broader networks of people who can come together around the project and support it in, you know, sometimes.
And that's about meeting people and reaching out and having conversations with people who are within LA or outside of LA that are interested in the arts in particular, and potentially they're already sitting on other boards. Is that the type of person that you're thinking?
Yeah, that's true. And I also think, you know, again, people who, this round the world question, I mean, it, you know, necessarily embedded within it is all kinds of questions about how we steward the land, how we steward the oceans, you know, what is our agency in it. And another good example of that is Phil Ross, who is, I suppose I would characterize him as a bioartist too. He is a scientist and an artist based in San Francisco who has an entrepreneurial venture called MycoWorks, where he's making a mushroom leather. So the intention behind that, as you can imagine, is to engage with, you know, all the sustainability issues that are embedded in real leather. So, you know, working with somebody like that, you can imagine that the provocation of a material like that and what it means, you know, across popular culture, but also what it can mean as an art material and where those two things come together could be exciting to a lot of different kinds of people. And also, one thing I would want to mention, because I mentioned the kind of upcoming project that we're developing right now, is we have just started a conversation with Lonnie Brooks and Ahmed Best, and together they do something called the Afrofuturist Podcast. And the way that I happened upon them was because I read an essay by Lonnie that was about, it was called Playing a Minority Forecaster in Search of Afrofuturism, Where Am I in the Future, Stuart Brand, or In This Future, Stuart Brand. And essentially, it was about, what it sounds like, which is, you know, where are people of color in these conversations that are happening around futures thinking. And so we're really excited to be sort of diving into what that project could look like too.
Very exciting, very exciting. Well, it's so good talking to you about these projects. Do you find artists on your own? Can artists reach out to you? Do you ever have open calls or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, we don't have a formal open call, but artists are always welcome to be in touch. They can be in touch through our website, and when we start working on projects, it usually comes by way of, you know, a series of very informal conversations. I always tell artists, you know, if you send me an idea, it doesn't have to be fully formed. I mean, that's part of what Fathomers is here for, is to kind of sort through the possibilities together. So by all means, if artists have ideas that they think might be a good fit, we're always excited to chat.
And let me ask you the last question, which is, what are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious.
Yeah, so the essay that I mentioned by Lonnie is one that I'd like to send to you to link to. I think it's a really crucial document, and it's got a lot in it. And I, in terms of thinking about how an organization like Fathomers moves forward more broadly, and then also thinking about what the relationship can be between, you know, there are so many kind of art, science, tech programs that are popping up every minute, and I think we have to, you know, think hard about what that means, right? And, you know, what are the motivations? Where is the money coming from? What do those organizations look like? How, what is their sustainability plan? And so that essay is certainly one that I would point to. And also Ahmed's podcast, the Afrofuturist podcast.
Stacey, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure, and I wish you great luck with the future of your projects and organization.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.